Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Pensacola, Florida, it's time for Pensacola Business Radio. Now, here are your Business Radio X hosts.
Hey, good morning. Keith over here, broadcasting live from Pensacola Business Radio. I have in our studio this morning Miss Sally Fox and Mr. Shane Rowe from Emmanuel Shepherd and Condon. Good morning.
Good morning, Keith.
So let's get right into it, huh? You guys are a huge firm, and I didn't realize until I started reading some of y'all's your bios and in the new pamphlet that Shane brought with him. But you guys offer a lot of services.
We offer a full service law firm.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. Go for it.
Well, we focus on everything from real estate, construction, social security, disability, personal injury work. What else do we do?
Well, I do the interviews down in Florida, and we have to describe the firm to the students. I say a lot of firms say they're a full service firm, but we really deliver on that. We like to say our lobby could be anyone from a multi-billion dollar investor or banker down to someone just needing help, you know, with a social security matter or even a domestic matter or personal injury. So it really, when we say we do everything, Sally, we really do.
We do estate planning, you name it.
So how many lawyers are in the firm? Because I know it's not just the two of you to do all this work, right?
No, they just send us out to do things like this.
No, we just hired a couple of new ones, too, that are coming. I'm thinking our number's about 28 now.
Yeah, I think we're about 28 with a couple of new folks coming. So we're looking to be close to 30 lawyers total. Staff-wise, probably counting the lawyers around, I think it's upwards of 80, 80-plus now down there. We're right on 30 South Spring Street, just north of the baseball stadium.
And we just opened an office in Sandestin on Grand Boulevard.
Okay.
We're happy.
So you're expanding. And you're down in swamp country. I can't stand it. But you're down at UF, right? Well, I mean, you're constantly heading down that direction, aren't you?
Well, I get down there for football games, Keith. I always seem to manage to do the interviews at the law school, John Adams and I, when there's a football game. Yeah. I'm not quite sure why that works out, but it seems
to. But it seems to work, huh? Very cool. So let's talk about, you know, Sally, where do you practice specifically? What type of law?
Yeah, I primarily focus on real estate, and that means everything from doing closings to solving title problems to helping people with landlord-tenant matters to foreclosure. If somebody doesn't pay you or to pay a bank, I'll kick them out and do that type of work. So I'll try to cover the whole gambit, and one of my favorite things to do is to solve title problems.
Yeah, okay, so what is title insurance?
So title insurance is an insurance policy that you buy one time. It's a one-time fee. You don't pay it, but the very first time you buy it, that's it. And it ensures that you have good title for the entire time that you own the property. And it even helps a buyer in the future. Your policy can give them a discount when they buy title insurance, but it is something that you can rely on if all of a sudden somebody comes up and says, wait a minute, that's my property.
Yeah.
Or more commonly, let's say that your name is Tom Smith.
Okay.
There are a lot of Tom Smiths. And there may be a Tom Smith that has 20 judgments against him because he hasn't paid his bills.
Yeah.
And those judgments go of record against Tom Smith. So if your name's Tom Smith, you may not be the one with those problems, but it's going to show up on your property, on your situation, and the title insurance will help clear all that up. Like, for example, I had one lady, and she had an odd name. It wasn't a Tom Smith name.
Sure.
You know, and she's like, well, all of a sudden I got this letter saying that they wanted to take my house. And I'm like, she's like, I don't even owe anybody.
Right.
And they had the wrong person. And the title insurance helps solve that.
So it's almost, it's protecting your identity, which obviously is a huge need these days.
Yeah, as relates to real estate.
So, okay, so you're getting title insurance and you guys can help with that. And do you need a lawyer to buy a house?
Oh, I really think you do. I wouldn't buy my mother's house without a lawyer.
Yeah.
You know,
I don't know the 900 pages of jargon when you go to sign to buy a house, but I remember flipping through it going, I should probably read this kind of stuff. But I know a lot of people know by the time you get to the mortgage company or you're ready to sign for the house, you're signing away, right?
Yeah. Well, one of the things that a lawyer can help you with is one, deciding on how you want to take title.
Yeah.
You know, it's really a big deal. And you sit there and go, do I want to take title with myself, with my spouse, with a family member?
Right.
And you can think about what you want to accomplish. Like right now, the house I'm living in, I don't think I'm going to move out. I think I'll probably die there.
Right.
So I can think through when I take the title, of what's going to happen when I die. I can do some estate planning with the title up front. You know, and there's lots of ways to hold title to property. For example, if you have rental property, you may not want to own it in your individual name.
Yeah.
As a landlord, you may want to form a company to put it in or a land trust to put it in.
Yeah.
You just want to think through all those things.
So what would benefit you to do that? I mean, obviously, when you have things in your name, then that just means that people can come after you personally. Is that correct?
Correct.
So it almost benefits you to not have it in your name.
Well, you know, there's, I know Shane knows a lot more about insurance than I do, but you can certainly get insurance that will cover a lot of risk. But I'll give you an example that happened to one of my clients. He had a rental property. The tenant said, you know, I think there's a problem with the heater.
Yeah.
And so he sends out a repair guy, and the guy says he's repaired it. And then the heater had a horrible fire, and the baby was burned up.
Oh, no.
And died. He got sued.
Sure.
And so he did have insurance. It wasn't a lot of insurance.
Right.
And it wasn't sufficient insurance to cover that kind of horrible situation.
Yeah.
And he had limitations because he had owned the property in an entity name. And so they're limited. Now, in his instance, he wasn't negligent. He did the things that he thought was supposed to do to fix his heater.
Right.
Okay. So it wasn't like he just ignored somebody's complaint that there was a heater problem.
Sure.
He tried to get it fixed. But, you know, he owned the property in a company name. And so it was limited to the assets within that company, which doesn't help family that lost the child.
Right.
And nobody's saying that that child and the family, you know, shouldn't be entitled to something.
Right.
But in the process, you don't want to lose everything you possibly have.
Yeah. Yeah. So setting yourself up to be somewhat protected from that kind of stuff.
Right.
Yeah. And speaking from the other side, because a lot of times I'm on the plaintiff's side of those cases, Sally's right. There is some benefit to whether it's a rental property or even a small business.
Yeah.
Just like the radio station here is under this franchise, but with having it in another entity and buying separate insurance, if something like that were to happen,
yeah,
it's the business assets, not the ability for someone to come and take your house, take your car,
yeah,
take your future earnings as a
yeah, your,
you know,
retirement
a
account, yeah, and anything else you have.
There are limitations as to what you can get, and Sally does some of that work too, but bottom line is, if anyone has questions about, hey, do I need to limit myself from liability, you know, our lawyers can help. And from the standpoint of someone on the other side that looks for, hey, is there a way to recover?
Right.
Very rarely am I ever recommending to my clients to go after somebody individually, because there are limitations and protections in Florida by Homestead and others where, let's face it, you could have a $1 million case, but Sally will tell you, if someone doesn't have the assets to go after,
yeah,
from a collection standpoint, you know, you really can't advise your client to pursue that route, because all they'll end up doing is paying attorney fees to,
right,
try to get it.
Yeah, you can't bleed a turnip. Isn't that the way it goes?
That's right.
Yep.
Can't,
yeah,
get blood out of a turnip.
That's it. Well, so you had said something about estate planning and stuff. So I have a will, but that question always comes up. So should you have a will? Should you have a power of attorney?
Yes,
you're shaking your
you
head.
Should.
Yes, yes.
And, you know,
why?
You know, it's an interesting question, because a lot of people think a power of attorney is all you need. And for example, I knew a lady whose husband recently died, and she said, well, we had a power of attorney and that's going to control everything. I said, no, a power of attorney ends at your husband's death.
Right.
So the power of attorney is only for use when you're alive.
Yeah.
And the best way to describe it is, for example, my mom. My mom has some dementia issues. She's really can't handle her affairs,
yeah,
right now.
Yeah.
But I have a power of attorney, so I can handle everything for her. A less extreme example is a situation where, let's just say you've got somebody going in for surgery.
Yeah.
And you don't know. You know, there's a risk that they could,
sure,
be down,
sure,
for a while. That power of attorney can assist with that too, so that you can appoint somebody to handle your affairs in the event that you just aren't capable for a little while.
Yeah.
And then accidents happen. You just don't know. So the power of attorneys during the life, going back to your question, which is the will, if you have a minor child, there is always a risk that the parents will die simultaneously.
Yeah.
Or let's just say there's not a parent.
That is, and I didn't realize this until probably because my grandparents are both getting towards the end of their life cycle. And that was one of the things that my father and I discussed, was that, you know, there's a possibility that if one of them dies, the other one's going to die very soon afterwards. That's a very common thing.
Yes.
You know, and so like you're saying, you have one go and then you're trying to scramble to get things set up. And the next thing you know, you're out of luck.
That's right.
Yeah.
If you have a minor child, you can appoint a guardian. And amazingly enough, not everyone wants a family member as a guardian.
Well, so that was going to be another question I was going to ask you. You can structure these, and you can structure a power of attorney any way you want, right?
That's
it doesn't have to be a family member. It can be two or three people. So you've got sort of the best interest of the one structuring it.
That's right.
So what's it called? Power of,
there
I guess,
be durable,
two to
there
three.
Specific. It can go to certain elements like healthcare.
Yeah.
You know, economic decisions. But I think what Sally was getting at earlier is if there was an auto accident or an injury in a house where both the mother and father passed at the same time.
Yeah.
And they might both have wills. You can tell them, I think what you're about to say is there's not sometimes a residual about what may take place and how
the
child may be taken care of. A simultaneous death, in other words.
Yeah.
As far as the will, I don't do a lot of will work, but I have litigated some will contests. And I will say, secondly, is people think they have a will because they've drafted it up or gone online or gone to Barnes and Nobles. Trust me, and Sally can speak to this, I'd probably say about 75 to 80% of those will probably be invalid. And then you end up dealing with the state of Florida,
right,
as it applies to a death or estate.
Now, why would those be invalid? Because I think people should know that, because there's a lot of advertisements for, .coms and whatever that you can go get your cookie cutter will.
Well, in the state of Florida, there has to be certain language in a certain format. And in every state, there are different laws on what makes a will valid. In Florida, you have to have a minimum of two witnesses. Those witnesses have to see you sign. And then a notary has to see all of those people sign.
Yeah.
So not only just you, but those two witnesses. So you end up having basically four people signing on the will.
Right.
The person making it, the witnesses, and the notary. And most of the forms that you see from online or wherever you can get them without a lawyer involved, they don't have that. And there's also some powers that you want to grant to your personal representative. And most of those forms don't have the correct powers set forth in them so that they can fully administer your estate.
Yeah. Well, and not to mention, you want to have readily access to that, and a lot of times if it's sitting at home, you can't always get to it. But if it's sitting in your office, I can make a phone call, right?
That's right. Yeah. We always make a note of where the people want to place their original will. And we have a lot of families that'll call us and say, you did my dad's will. He's just passed away.
Right.
Where's the original will?
Right.
And we can tell them that unless somebody's moved it, not us, but unless the father might have done something.
Yeah. Or it's in some safety deposit box somewhere you can't get to. So,
yeah.
Well, and another thing I had learned, not too long ago is that if you hadn't updated your will in 5 years, I think there was a huge need to take a look at it because some things have changed in the last couple of years.
Well, a lot of times people's lives change too, but the power of attorney law is the one that's really changed.
Right.
There are very specific requirements on what kind of powers you can give and how you can give those powers. You must specifically authorize them and initial beside them and things of that nature. Where before, you could just say, well, I want this person to be able to do anything they want.
Right.
And that's not the case anymore.
Yeah.
You can't just do that.
You have to be very specific with it, huh?
That's correct.
Huh. Well, that's why we come to see you guys, right?
Yeah. And one of the great things about estate planning is that you can eliminate the need almost for a will, by determining, like every bank account now that you open, credit union, wherever, always has a payable on death card. So you're not making someone else the owner of your account. What you're saying is upon my death, I want Keith to have access to my account. And everybody should do that. And that the banks don't always mention it, or if they do, you aren't paying attention, but you should always do that. And then that way, that doesn't have to go through probate. And that's the case with almost everything. You can do that in advance so that you don't have to have a probate, which eliminates an expense and a time-consuming process.
So let's talk about what happens if you don't have that and somebody passes away. I mean, that makes everybody's free game at that point, right?
Well, not so much free game, but things may not go the way you want them to. For example, if you have a spouse and you have a child by another marriage or another partner, then things don't always go exactly the way you think they might. Like, for example, you might want your current spouse to get everything, but it wouldn't go that way.
Right.
It would be split between that spouse and that child. And, so it just doesn't always go the way you want.
Yeah.
For example, you may think, well, my spouse has all she needs or he needs. I really want all my stuff to go to my children. Well, that has to be set out in the will because it won't automatically go that way.
Yeah. And the state, that's the way the state of Florida operates.
They have a statute that says if you don't have a will, this is what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And I've got a situation right now where, you know, unfortunately a woman passed away from an auto accident down in South Florida. Her and her husband, who were married 30 years ago, had been separated for all intents and purposes, considered themselves not married.
Right.
No real contact for 20 some odd years. We couldn't even find the guy, but he showed up, and now we have money that's going into an estate.
Right.
That's being claimed on by a husband who, for all intents and purposes,
was divorced.
Has nothing to do with her children,
right,
who were from another father. And now, of course, the children who were in her life for 25 years are now dealing with someone coming in. I can't blame them for being a little upset, but as Sally said, there is no will. There was no intent or anything in writing suggesting that if I pass, this is where I want things to go.
Right.
Now, we can talk all day long about, well, should you go on ahead and go on through the divorce process, and there might have been reasons for that. But that's the purpose. And now, unfortunately, these children who have been a part of her life for 25 years are now having to deal with someone they don't even know just because there wasn't a legal document saying that there was a divorce. But the Florida laws say surviving spouse,
right,
meaning if you're not divorced, that's the way it goes. Yeah. So just one example. There's many, though.
Which, well, and let's just be honest here. That makes it a real difficult fight for you guys.
Yes,
so for that family that honestly deserves the money and wants to carry on, and the children want to just move on and grieve, you guys are now having to fight the state of Florida, right?
Well, not necessarily the state, but what is happening is everyone's lawyering up. Okay?
Yeah.
We're representing the personal representative of the estate. Now there's insurance companies, lawyers,
right,
who are trying to determine what to do. All sides, including what I would consider the ex-husband, but husband, has lawyered up. And, of course, as Sally will tell you, once you have people challenging where money's going, not only is there a delay, but everybody starts paying attorney fees.
Right.
And, you know, if you're doing legitimate work, we need to be paid. But we don't like situations where everybody's having to lawyer up when they could have prevented it by you know, simply coming in and meeting with someone like Sally or some of our lawyers for a couple hours would have prevented all this.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, so let's, I want to move away from the whole wills and the death and all that kind of stuff, but let's talk about social media. Okay. Because I know that this has been huge over our last couple years, and, you know, you can get in trouble with it.
You can get in real trouble.
You can get in big trouble with it. So
we have people that do divorce, you know, for a, attorney
and via Facebook.
Exactly. That's the first thing that they look at, and you can get those records. You can it's not like once you delete it,
nothing is private anymore. I believe that
nothing's private, and not only just the divorce arena, but we recently were interviewing someone to hire, and I'm like, well, let's just go on the Facebook, and I was like, oh no, I mean, it was embarrassing what was on Facebook for this person. And that isn't an image as a law firm that we can project or desire to project. You know, so, and now some of those pictures that were on were probably things posted by other people.
Sure.
Where they had tagged them.
Check your privacy settings, people.
But I was kind of glad they hadn't.
Yeah. 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 But so, well, what kind of protection do you have for, I mean, how do you protect yourself? I mean, obviously, other than, If your mother wouldn't be proud of it, or it wouldn't be something you'd say in church, then don't put it on the social media. But let's just face it, even some things that aren't meant in that direction, people can misconstrue and use against somebody. So
I don't know that you can protect. I can tell you from the standpoint of some of our clients that on either end, defense work or plaintiff's work, one of the first things we ask them is, if you've got a social media page up, you don't need to be commenting on this.
Right.
Okay. Number one. Number two, let's face it. I think social media generally is what I think most of the time, Sally, maybe not in the situation whoever you saw, but it might not be a 100% correct impression of who we are. It's who we want people to think we are. From injury litigation, it's been a hotbed topic over the last couple of years is, are you allowed to get, in someone's Facebook account and see what messages they're sending, see what pictures they posted, because you can get on delete stuff. As you said, though, things don't go away. I can give you a story from both ends. I had a deposition one time of a client of mine that was married and injured, and one of the parts of the claim was, hey, you know, this injury affected my relationship with my husband. No doubt it did.
Sure.
But I'm in a deposition and they start asking about these people. I have no idea who they are. Okay. Well, the defense had gone on the Facebook page and found some allegation of stop calling my husband or this, that, and the other.
Right.
It might not have really been much.
But it was enough.
But when there's smoke, there's fire in litigation. Obviously, I was taken a little bit by surprise on that. This is early on. I didn't think I had a Facebook page at this time, you know. But another story is from a defense angle, when we were going after a business, there was some allegation that, well, we didn't know there was anything wrong with, I'm not going to get into specifics, but we didn't know there was anything wrong with this, you know, table or the way we had things set up. There was no defect. We got on Facebook page of the business and found pictures
of the exact same thing
with
that you're in litigation
in it
for.
And problems. Yeah. So that ended up really harming them. So look, Facebook is what it is. I don't know that it always accurately reflects, but you can tell folks you definitely don't need to be commenting on any litigation. That's what we tell them, because any comments you make is no different than me telling Sally, hey, you know, I really shouldn't have done that. I caused that wreck. And then someone tries to get my statement. That's, you know, you can't, if it's an admission, it's hearsay.
Yeah.
Just like it is on Facebook.
Yeah.
So
it's been Twitter or Instagram or any of the other accounts that are out there now. So, and there's so many of them as we were talking before the show, but I think I saw the best one yesterday was for Halloween. Everybody should go as who they pretend to be on their Facebook page. You know, cause you're right. It's not always accurate. And obviously it can get you in a lot of trouble if you're not careful.
I think Sally mentioned the domestic part of it. You know, people go through divorce. That's a tough time. But I think if you went on their Facebook page, it'd probably be mostly happy pictures. And then they come back and say, well, you look like you're doing just fine.
Yeah.
You know, based on these pictures you're posting, but it's not always accurate.
So is that kind of stuff admissible in court, or is it does it become hearsay, or does it just become, like you said, where there's smoke, the fire, so you're placing doubt into other people's minds?
Well, any picture you post, now whether it's admissible is another question,
right,
Keith. You know, if someone suggests that, hey, I can't do anything in my life, I'm so hurt from this, and there's a picture on Facebook with them on a boat, that's going to be admissible. Now, whether they're out having fun with friends and whether that's enough to be posting a bunch of pictures in front of a jury would be a question for a judge. But from a hearsay standpoint, what you say on Facebook, depending on the manner or the statement,
right,
if you went on Facebook and said, I'm so glad that I have this person out of my life, and then you claim in court that it's killing you, then that's admissible.
Yeah. Right?
But generally, comments you make to others are protected by hearsay, but there are exceptions.
Yeah. But let's face it, somebody reads it and they read it and they're going to form their own opinion.
Correct.
Yeah. So, well, there's your social media minute for you today.
You're going to delete your Facebook page?
Yeah. Put yourself in check.
I have one. I do. And people post things on there that you go, oh, please, really?
Keith, if you're going to dress up as who you pretend to be, who are you dressing up?
Oh, man, I don't know.
Well, I have wore a devil costume for Halloween costume, and that's what everybody posted. I'm like, oh, great, a lawyer who's now depicted as a devil.
Yeah, great. Yeah. You know, I might just have to take the chef knife and put the chef coat back on for a little while. You know, that's probably been the majority of my pictures have been either that or hanging with the kids. So I think I'm pretty safe. I hope I'm pretty safe. Shane, let's talk about more about what you practice. Because I know you're in a sort of a different arena than what Sally does, right?
Yeah, we, you know, the great thing about our firm is because it is full service, Sally's had clients she's had to send to me if they've had an issue with maybe insurance or, you know, an auto accident. Same thing with me. If I've had a client who comes to me and says, hey, I own a business and I've got to do something, I can send them up to Sally or somebody else upstairs. But, you know, probably about 70% of what I do is plaintiff-related injury work, whether that be auto accidents, products liability, medical malpractice. The other 30% is probably a split between defense work. Quite frankly, some of my plaintiff attorney friends don't like to hear that, but I do some defense work of doctors and some businesses. No insurance companies per se, but more businesses in town that might need it. And I'm also representing folks in businesses mostly against BP right now.
Yeah.
From the oil spill.
God, I can't believe we're still dealing with all that.
That'll be going on for years to come. I mean, in fact, I'd gather to say that from a business standpoint, probably only 25 to 30% of the claims around here are settled, at least from what we're seeing. There was a lot settled early on
you know,
when they were handing out checks to folks, but that's all changed.
Yeah.
Those were smaller ones, too.
Yeah, I think they wanted to get a lot of the numbers of the claims down so they'd pay off a waitress or a waiter or a bartender real quick and lower down the numbers so it didn't look so bad when the amount of claims were presented for this multi-district litigation.
So what do you, I mean, if you're allowed to even talk about it, but I mean, what do you, so what are you guys dealing with now? You're dealing with the long term, the big money, the, this is, how
they
does
range,
it go?
They range. I mean, we still have claims that individuals have brought, which are smaller claims up to and including, you know, big construction companies, in town, a number of them. So there's still a wide gamut of claims.
Yeah. Just taking that long to get through the court systems and stuff.
We could have a 2-hour show on all the stuff that happened in New Orleans, but and with the center and how the claims have been appealed and the federal court fights between BP and class counsel. But bottom line is we're getting more delays, but things are moving better than they were maybe 2 years ago.
Sure, sure. So, well, you mentioned New Orleans. Are you got? Do you guys practice in Alabama, Mississippi, or Louisiana? Or
we do have attorneys who are admitted to practice in Alabama, as well as a few other places. Our focus is primarily for the Gulf Coast.
Sure.
I would say that I don't think any of us really go over to Louisiana, but some litigation will span a region.
Right. And well, obviously, as the BP has done,
correct.
I'm sure.
Correct. And so, I mean, there, you can get admitted on a case-by-case basis to appear in things like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we have maybe 5 or 6 attorneys that are licensed in Alabama, pretty much in every area of the firm, whether that's from the injury group up through and including the commercial litigation, contract work, wills, estates, trusts, some of the stuff that Sally has talked about. So we try to make sure, because we do have clients that have a need in Alabama.
Yep.
So we've tried to make sure that in each section of the firm, there is an Alabama licensed attorney.
Hmm. What do you guys think is the new, what's a new area of law that you are seeing really start to progress that people are needing either representation for that's coming up that maybe wasn't here 2 or 3 years ago?
Well, more and more intellectual property, obviously.
Yep.
I mean, that is just a hotbed, you know, where people have things and they're like, oh, that, you know, I developed that, that's mine. People invent things. People, you know, create things online. It just goes all over the place. They're like, well, that's my product. That's my story. That's my jingle, whatever it is. And so that's really coming more and more. People are writing software, apps, things of that nature.
Yeah.
And who owns that?
Yeah. And, we were talking earlier, but we broadcasted at the I-10 Wired over the weekend last Thursday and Friday, and met a couple patent attorneys that were literally intellectual property attorneys. And I asked if that's something that could fill your schedule, and they were like, absolutely. So, and then after seeing some of that stuff, you're right. It's there now more than it ever was 5 years ago, you know?
Well, I mean, it will surprise you sometimes. Like, for example, I know that there was an advertisement that I was involved in where somebody put a Monopoly board.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, they didn't think anything about that. That was just part of their ad.
Sure.
Well, the Monopoly people wrote them.
Yeah.
And said, you shall not use our Monopoly board. And by the way, you owe us money.
Yeah.
I mean, so it's, and apparently those folks, you know, have people that full time
are watching out for that.
Watching out for that.
So, well, then let's talk about the other side, because I have a friend that she had posted a couple really neat pictures, and one of them had a wine glass that she was holding, and it was just on her back porch. But I think 2 weeks later, that company had used her picture from her Instagram account for an advertisement.
For their wine glass.
For their wine glass. And you know, she thought it was kind of cool, but then, you know, on the other side of it, it's like, wait a second. That was my property, you know, regardless of your wine glass in it or not. And they went and used it. So I guess that door swings both ways.
It goes both ways. Yeah. It's images. You know, who owns the images?
Yeah. Which is huge. So who does own the image? I mean, how does that work?
You know, that's a good question. I mean, I think the state of Florida just recently enacted a law, you know, about some images that are, we'll call them less than desirable to be on the internet, and making that a crime to do that if you know they shouldn't.
Yeah.
But, you know, in general, once you release it out there,
it's kind of out there,
it's
right?
It's kind of out there unless you have notation. And I don't profess to be a patent expert like that, but I know that there are ways that you can protect your images.
Like a watermark or something.
Correct. Like copyright, trademark. things of that nature, so that you can protect it. And if you don't take those steps, then you don't have all the protections, particularly if it's images, you know, like some of the National Geographic images that you've seen that are so iconic.
Yeah.
And some of the other images from New Yorker and all that. I mean, people make their living with those images and they want to protect those.
Yes. Yeah. And, you know, gosh, it's right there. You can just grab it and go. I mean, I know I've shared 100 of them and not even thinking about it, but, you know, it's just that easy. Some company could come right after you for doing that.
Yeah, and some people's websites, they'll take content and they'll just put images even of just areas and stuff like that, and they'll go, no, that can't be. You can't use our image to put that on your website.
Yeah, give you an example. Some of these images in
Your new pamphlet?
Have all been vetted very carefully.
Okay. I would hope so, that the law firm definitely vetted the material you're going to use.
You actually have to pay these images in our brochure. You have to pay to use them.
Yeah.
There's sites you go where if you don't want to get
photos
in trouble,
and stuff
like
that.
That's what you do. So.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about your new brochure. So let's get into it, man. What have we not covered that Emanuel Shipper and Condon does?
We could probably have a 4-hour show discussing all that. I mean, I'm just reading through it, Keith. I mean, personal injury, trial practice, social security disability.
Yeah.
Any business really in corporate need. Sally can talk about that, as well as real estate law, guardianships, estates, probates, trust, tax work. You know, we have a full-time tax attorney with the firm.
Yeah. Because you wouldn't need a tax lawyer for anything, would you?
Oh, gosh. And we do construction law.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And, you know, we help people whenever they're either in the construction business, or they're subcontractors, or you have a situation where you're building a home or a building, or you've got repair problems. Let's say you hired a repair person and that person didn't do the right job. I mean, there's tips that you can do to stop that from happening. Like, for example, if you're hiring somebody to do repairs, do not pay them in full before they do the work.
Yeah, sure.
And get a real understanding of what it is that they're going to do for you, and make sure, if possible, that they're licensed, bonded, and insured, and that they have workers' comp.
Yeah, and legitimate.
And all those things, right. But so many people are like, well, they said they were going to do this job for me at my house, and it was going to be $1,500. And so I gave them the $1,500, and they've never come back.
Yeah. Well, of course. And I know a lot of times when we get storms and hurricanes, that was always huge. People just coming in and poaching and taking what they can and hauling butt. So.
Yeah, you got to be careful with the insurance. And you mentioned earlier areas of practice. I think, you know, Sally can comment on this too. I think what we're seeing more of, everyone thinks, well, when I have a problem is when I need to call an attorney. I think that's the bad way to look at
it.
And that is, I mean, I know Sally and her group did a seminar recently, you know, concerning real estate and other things. Myself and my group have done seminars or met with business clients about what insurance do you need and what do you need to be protected as well from the employment end. We don't have any employment lawyers here today, but they do that as well. I think we're seeing, I know I am, seeing more folks who might be on the other end of what I do saying, can you come in and consult with us to make sure that this doesn't happen?
Are
we protected?
A preventative maintenance kind of thing.
And I think that I'm seeing more of that. I think there should be more of that, and maybe we don't do a good enough job of telling them that we offer those services, but I can't tell you a smarter thing to do if you're a business that just says, hey, you know, our firm has employment lawyers, lawyers that handle plaintiff and defense work, lawyers like Sally that know everything about, you know, estate, real estate, guardianship work, collection work, you know, what insurance might you need.
Or
to have a consultation and pay for it, because trust me, it'll save you in the long run.
Yeah. Or even how your business is set up. I mean, is it
correct?
Is it done correctly? Because I know when we did Pensacola Business Radio, we are a part of a franchise, but we are Pensacola Business Radio LLC. So we are still a separate entity. And I know going through some of that stuff, there were some legitimate questions that I needed to make sure. What always seems simple, you know, in the long run, like you're saying, could really hurt you if you're not paying attention.
Yeah, a lot of people will form businesses that they don't think through some of the things that you need to know.
Like
what authority, what vote does it take to make big decisions? Is it just one of you if there's more than one owner? And then let you have situations going back to the estate planning, but for business, you need to have in those documents what happens if you have two or three people owning a business. Somebody doesn't want to continue. They pass away. They become disabled. you know, what happens, and all that should be included in those documents. And it should set forth that on the agreement. One of the things that I come up, you were talking about forming an LLC. Mm-hmm. One of the things that I do is help lenders and banks close loans to people. And so a LLC or a corporation will come in and say, I want to make a loan. The bank's like, great, we want to make you
right,
a loan.
Right, sure.
And we need your documentation for your company. And so many people have no documentation yeah. whatsoever. Yes, they formed a company, they've registered right. with the Secretary of State, but that's not what the bank needs to make a loan.
Right, they need the actual paperwork that came back from the Department of Revenue, right?
That's well, not just that. They need the operating agreements if it's an LLC. They need the bylaws if it's a corporation. And a lot of people just skip that step.
Mm-hmm.
And so they're then scrambling. The bank's ready to make the loan. They're scrambling to try to come up with documents that the bank finds acceptable.
Sure.
And they can't just be little documents you've printed off some, you know, whatever, fly-by-night
yeah.
website.
Or even a lot of times I know people, they'll mistake, and I say this because we had to do this. We, my business partner and I, we talked a lot about all that initial setup through email. And so both of us were like, let's just reference the email for the setup. Luckily, we had some good advice from a lawyer who said, okay, I'll take that email and we'll turn it into a legal document.
That you signed.
Yes. Yeah, that we signed. So, but just that easy. You're like, oh, okay, well, we've had communications. It's recorded. That's going to work if something happens.
It won't work.
No, it won't work. No, you actually have to have some signatures and some legitimate setup.
Right. And then, yeah. then if somebody doesn't pull their load when you start a company, I know I've been in companies where all of a sudden somebody, for whatever reason, maybe they're tired, they want to move away, they get involved in something else, they're really not contributing to the company anymore. Yeah. And so you sit there and go, well, we're all working our little tails off, you know, trying
chip
to
chip in here, huh?
Yeah, chip in. Come on. And then they sit there and go, what do we do? We've got this one guy who's just kind of disappeared on us, but he still wants part of the company.
Yeah.
And he still wants some of the income that we're all sitting here working really hard for. I mean, how do you deal with that? All yeah. that should be set forth in these documents.
It's the proverbial active partner becomes a silent partner.
Right? Yeah.
That's right. But
yeah.
still wants the money.
You right. know, it's funny because I just, and I won't say who it is, but I just had a group of friends in a company, three of them, and they had a fourth, and that's exactly what happened. And, you know, sort of dove out and wasn't doing anything. And then they wanted to, I guess, buy him out would be the correct term. And immediately all of a sudden lit up and started just fighting because the company was making money.
Of course.
They wanted to buy him out, but now he was like, I guess he realized staying in would be worth more than being bought out, but still didn't want to produce. So then again, attorneys and everybody lawyering up, and just it was a whole mess for a year,
right.
and they've just now gotten through it. But some of that obviously could have been avoided had the correct terminology been in the agreement.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is why you go down to Emanuel Shepherd and Condon sure. and find Sally or Shane yeah. and make it happen, right?
I know. I really like it when people pre-plan. But I also, we're happy to help when people don't.
Yeah.
I mean, that's probably the bulk of what we've got. You know, yeah. even as simple as a landlord-tenant thing. Like, I had a call the other day from somebody that said, I'm a landlord and I rented my property out, my home. They, mm-hmm. they'd gotten married and one spouse, you know, both of them had a home and they're like, well, rent one of them out. And the tenant all of a sudden was like, you're not over here pulling my weeds. You've got to pull my weeds. And you're not over here. And I've got a little bit of mold growing on my brick here. You need to take care of that. And they just went through this whole thing where you go, I don't even pull my own weeds, for God's
yeah,
sakes.
Let alone
I mean?
Yours.
yeah, let alone yours. And so the landlord's like, well, I don't know what I have to do, but I'm not about to go over there and pull weeds
sure.
for this tenant and clean off mold because, I mean, it's Florida. There's mold.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, and I was like, well, what does your lease say? Because that's what controls. And unfortunately, he had used a lease that said the property will be, you know, in pristine condition
sure.
and the landlord will maintain it that way at landlord's expense. And I'm like, what in the world are you doing with a lease like that?
Yeah.
You know, and so we were ultimately able to amend the lease and get it worked out. But, you know, if you're a tenant, that's a great lease for you. You know, but I've also had tenants where the opposite happened, where the tenant says, well, the landlord says he's not going to come over and fix anything.
Right.
And I said, what does your lease say? And the lease, sure enough, will say you rented it as is. Landlord has absolutely
right.
no
responsibility
whatsoever.
Yeah.
And so you really have to just read it. And before
like
you
those 30
sign
pages
it,
of documents before you sign it. Yeah.
Or have someone review it. I've always said, you know, obviously insurance agents sell insurance. That is business consultants that can come in and talk to you about how to set things up. I have always maintained that the best people to talk to about whether it's auto insurance, home insurance, landlord-tenant issues that Sally's talking about, title insurance, are folks that litigate those issues.
Yeah.
Because they're going to know how they're going to get around one thing or the other. And I'm surprised more folks don't do that. But the litigators, quite frankly, are the best people to ask, to what do I need to do to protect myself?
Yeah, they see all the problems.
Yep.
So, and this here's a great example. My father is a lawyer, and a couple years back needed the insurance policy that he had paid for. And I remember him saying to me, I'm really glad and I really like this insurance company. And I'll mention the name. He said, because when I read the policy, which most people don't do, when I read the policy, it was written by lawyers. It was written in that sense of litigation. Now, my dad being a lawyer had that advantage, but the fact of the matter is that he chose this insurance company because exactly that. It was written in a language that he knew down the road would protect him if something were to happen. So I'm not a lawyer, but I now use some of that insurance company. You know what I mean? So I completely understand what you're saying. And a lot of people, they don't even read the policy, let alone know what the language means.
Yeah, I can't tell you how many times even from just as simple as auto accident insurance, folks come in, have no idea. They're on the phone with me, and I say, well, what type of coverage do you have? And they said, I have full coverage. Well, first of all, there's no such thing as full coverage.
That's right.
I tell them that. And it turns out they come in, and all they have is what the state of Florida requires, which doesn't protect you.
Sure.
And more people need to know that. I can't tell you how many conversations I've had where they just had no idea.
Yeah.
Whether they didn't read it or they didn't consult with their agent or they went online and buy insurance online. Let's face it, you don't have someone in the room with you telling you, well, if this happens, this is
right.
Especially in Florida, which is no fault state. You have to protect yourself.
That's right.
You know, from an insurance standpoint.
You got to ask the questions and you got to know which questions to ask.
Well, and the insurance agents don't necessarily cover everything. Like I had a situation where somebody owned three dogs. They're nice dogs. I know the dogs. They're awesome dogs.
Sure.
They were having a party. One of the dogs, a girl brought a new boyfriend, and one of the three dogs went up and immediately bit him in the crotch.
Mm, nice.
Yeah. And so the owner is like, oh my gosh, I don't know what's going to happen.
Right.
And you know, it turned out that the boyfriend was not a nice person, which, you know, that should have been a sign.
Sure.
The dog knew before. But come to find out, the owner's insurance excluded dog bites, but it would have only been like a $27 rider for their insurance agent to add that on, and it would have fully covered the dog bite.
Yeah.
And they're like, I didn't know. I didn't know. Who knew?
Yeah.
I think that's, you know, when you asked for some questions, I think one of the things we wrote down was pitfalls when you're applying for insurance. And Sally hit the nail on the head with dog bite cases. Some policies have exclusions outright for dogs. Others have exclusions for certain breeds of dogs. But most folks, whether I'm on the defense or the plaintiff end, say, oh, I have coverage for it, and then they don't.
Yeah.
And then we go back to what we discussed earlier is they're personally responsible for that.
Yeah.
So if you don't set up a corporation correctly or you're individual, you make sure you have the coverage. And that goes to the application process. I think some folks just fill things out online or just don't really pay attention and may not list that they had dogs in the house. Because there are some arguments that you could come back and say, well, wait a minute. I disclosed that this person lived at my house, or I disclosed that there was dogs in my house. You should have given me that coverage.
Right.
You can go back and make those arguments, but the application process is important in that as well.
Well, and let's face it, it takes one hole and everything can kind of fall apart. You know, I had, we had a gentleman from an insurance company on yesterday, and I was on the other side of this. I was amazed that there were so many things covered under a homeowner insurance when you're not even in the home when it happened, or these umbrella things that they have now where there's so much more that you may not even know you one had, but two that you even needed.
I mean, I've had very sophisticated clients who, quite frankly, pay attention to their insurance policies that there's been problems with.
Yeah.
And a lot of people don't know if you leave the United States, you're not covered by your car insurance, and you need an umbrella policy.
Yeah.
In case something were to happen. We had an individual who was with friends overseas, and they had an auto accident, and they got sued here in the States, and their auto policy, I told them, is not going to cover it.
Yeah.
And it came down to an umbrella. I always say use your Amex when you go overseas because there's built-in coverage there.
And not necessarily the coverage from the rental car company either, because that's not always as valid as you think it is.
Florida is one of those weird states from an auto standpoint where it's a no-fault state.
Right.
So the minimal coverage you have to purchase does not protect others if you hit them.
Sure.
So I always tell folks you need to have uninsured motorist coverage because our facts show about, or figures show about, close to 50% of the drivers in the state either don't have insurance, obviously need to protect yourself there, or have the minimal amount, which means if you know, I think the misconception, quite frankly, I had until I started doing this litigation was, well, I've got coverage. I'm good. Because if somebody hits me, you know, I've got my coverage to help with my medical and anything not paid, I'll go after them.
Right, provided they have insurance.
did not know that the state of Florida does not require, different from Alabama because I litigate auto over there, which they require bodily injury policies.
Yeah.
So most of the time, if something were to happen, there's a car ran through your yard or rear-ended you, property damage, personal injury, whatever it might be, in Alabama, you pretty much know, hey, there's some ability to recover. In Florida, 50% of the time, there's not, which is why
so
you have to consult with your agent or someone about the uninsured motorist coverage or an umbrella policy, something like that.
Which, again, is why we're going to go to Emanuel Shipper and Condon and find you two to make sure.
That's right.
That's it. Let's talk about, I know you guys in the firm are big in the community. Yeah? So, because I know Shane and I have done Egg Fest together with some other things.
Leap and stuff. Egg
and Leap. And as a matter of fact, they're coming on later today to talk about their project this year.
Okay.
So. Oh, great.
Yeah. So, but what else have you guys been active in, or what do you guys got going on lately that we need
Sally,
to let people know about?
Sally, you kicked this one off and off. We've been talking for a while on this.
You know, one of the things about lawyers is they love being involved in the community, and everybody has different passions. And of course, you tend to go where your passion lies. I mean, you know, I'm in one area, which I love opera, I love symphony, I love ballet.
Yeah.
I'm an arts person. You know, I'm on the board of the Pensacola Opera. It's the most amazing opera. It rivals.
Yeah.
It's the best in the country. And so I love that type of thing. We're all, obviously, I love animals. So I love the Humane Society, and I love doing that kind of thing. So I tend to go where my passions are.
Right.
You know, I think Shane has been very active in Big Brothers, Big Sisters.
Yeah, Big Brothers, Big
Chain
Sisters.
Chain Reaction.
I think I worked with you on both those, Keith. Chain Reaction, you know, Leap on the alumni board, do some consultation with their board still. But, you know, the firm, I don't, quite frankly, Sally, I probably would not be incorrect to say that if you picked any major board or charity organization in town, either we have someone who's on it, who has been on it,
right,
or we've probably contributed. I mean, Sally and I are both two of the three partners on management now, and just about every week on our agenda is
a board meeting of some sort.
Well, a board meeting or some kind of a charity to support. Normally, we obviously push to support the ones that our lawyers are on the boards or on a committee. But, you know, as far as the firm, I mean, we've been entrenched with Fiesta for years.
Yeah.
We host the kickoff party. But whether it's Big Brothers, Big Sisters, Chain Reaction, Junior Achievement, all of the arts, Arts Council, Fiesta Board, most of the big charity boards, Sacred Heart Charity Board, we have someone on it. And that's something, quite frankly, that it's not that we don't want people to do it. We don't have to tell them to do it.
Yeah,
we usually try to recruit folks that want to be involved in the community. Let's face it, I think it's good for the community.
It is.
We hope that there's a benefit to us
as well. Yeah, of course.
And obviously from the standpoint of getting the firm's name out there, I think that's a big way that the firm's name was out there for years, not only doing, you know, great legal work for over 100 years, long before Sally and I walked in the door.
Yeah.
But with the community involvement too.
And we do legal services, and we help with pro bono cases. There's always a need. It's so expensive to have a lawyer nowadays.
Oh, gosh,
It even floors me, and I'm a lawyer. You know, I'm just like, oh, my gosh, I can't believe how much this is costing to litigate this. But so many people cannot afford a lawyer. And we give free legal work all the time. And we obviously can't do it every day or we'd be out of business. Right. We couldn't pay our employees. Like, we couldn't pay ourselves. I mean, we just would shut down. But we are constantly giving back to people that cannot afford a lawyer, either through former legal services or just informally for people that we know that are on hard times.
Yeah. And Shane, so Shane just said 100 years too. That's still rolling around in my head. Firm has been there 102 years, huh?
Yeah.
I would say not at that location.
Right, sure.
Or Pensacola, but I think is 1913 is the day of inception. I believe it's 1917 here in Pensacola. So long before we were there.
So does he have any cool memorabilia hanging around the firm, like old pictures and stuff?
Oh, we have
from
great old
pictures. I thought I've seen some of that, because I've been to, obviously, a couple of board meetings there, but I thought I had seen some of that history hanging around the firm.
We do. Yeah.
Very cool.
Yeah, it's walking through history just seeing that.
Well, and I'll tell you what, there's a bunch here in this building too, obviously, since they've redone it, but Robin upstairs has a lot of all the warehouses and stuff around here and the old pictures from the furniture factories and stuff. And just walking through the history of this town has been absolutely amazing to see.
Yeah, know. How things change.
Yeah.
Even the waterfront.
Yeah.
So different.
Yeah. And I constantly am referring to sweeping the tumbleweeds out of Palafox when I'm in here with people and we're talking about the last 5-6 years of growth down there. So it's amazing where we've come. And I moved here in 89, so I can see the progress. But 100 years, man, I had no idea that firm had been there that long.
Yep.
Yeah. So, well, look, let's tell everybody where we can find you.
All right. 30 South Spring Street is our Pensacola office, right downtown. Red brick building, tan columns. We're there. We'd love to have you visit.
Yeah.
And then we also have on Grand Boulevard. Do you remember the
Sandestin? I don't know the address. Grand Boulevard. I think everybody knows where that is in Sandestin. Yeah. We just opened an office in their little complex on
Google
the backside. Quite frankly, I don't have that address memorized because we just opened it.
Yeah.
Last Friday. So, but our website is www.esclaw.com. Phone number 433-6581. I always tell folks, if you go down Garden, and everybody knows where the baseball stadium is.
Yeah.
That's right.
Go off Garden toward the baseball stadium. We're about a football field down on your left. A little blue sign out front. It won't let us put up a neon, but we might have a bigger sign.
Yeah, I know. There's some comments going on around that one. You guys have a Facebook page now too that's very active from what I understand.
Yeah. You asked us earlier about Twitter and Sally and I looked at each other. I have a Twitter page, but quite frankly, Keith, I don't know if I've tweeted or if that's the appropriate word to use.
Right.
We do have a Facebook page. I did email our marketing person who will
send me some
send
links,
that
huh?
email to or link to our Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, the like. We have made a lot of progress, in my opinion, on social media. Lawyers are usually the last ones to embrace that kind of stuff.
Yeah, we don't really engage in social media because we're so we've seen it used so much against people in litigation. We try to just go, no, that's
but
okay.
You know, I mean, these days it's how people are doing
it
research
is.
For your companies and trying to find out what you guys do and what you offer. So I hear you. There's so much of it that, and it's kind of like the cybersecurity stuff. There's so much of it where you just want to stay away from it, but it's a necessity to have.
Is.
You know, so
that's how I find people I need now. Let's just say I need somebody that does whatever, repairs.
Yeah.
I'll go online.
Sure.
That's how I look now.
Yeah, the yellow pages is no more.
we can't have pictures of us having fun on Facebook.
Oh, God,
because
no.
All of our clients expect us to be in the office working, right, Sal?
That's right.
That's right.
That's right. Well, look, I want to thank both of you for coming on today and sharing Emmanuel Shepherd and Conan and all the law that you guys practice and everything that y'all do in the community. So
thank you, Keith.
Yeah.
We will have all of your links on our site so that people can find you and, of course, hear this interview again. And
well, thank you for what you're doing for our community, because I've listened to some of your prior cast.
Yeah.
And because you've got them on your website.
Yeah.
And they're fascinating. I've learned so much.
Well, thank you. Yeah, and I hope to keep really featuring a lot of what the businesses do in town here. I think what we're doing and really getting into the nuts and bolts of what everybody does is a huge benefit for Pensacola.
Pretty new start, and things are going well for you so far.
Yeah. You guys are welcome back.
Thank you.
So you did good. So, okay, if you want to find us, we are at Pecola Radio X. We are Pensacola Business Radio on Facebook, or you can find us on our website at pensacola.businessradio.com. And I'd like to thank you guys again for coming in. And this has been Pensacola Business Radio, where business is good and your work matters. Mm-hmm.